Welcome to the 302nd episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Hannah Howard, author of the debut novel, Ignite the Sun. And stay tuned for after the interview when I have a short excerpt of Hannah Howard reading from her novel, Ignite the Sun. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Hannah Howard, author of the young adult fantasy novel, Ignite the Sun. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great. Well, if someone listening hasn't heard about Ignite the Sun yet, how would you describe the novel?
Well, it's young adult fantasy, and it's written kind of in a traditional vein. So we have a journey and some personal growth that has to happen. But the basic premise is that my main character has grown up without ever having seen the sun. She lives in a world that's been cursed to darkness. In the beginning chunk of the novel, this isn't giving really anything too big away, she discovers that she actually has a connection to the long-lost sun. And it gives her the power to potentially bring back the sun and banish the darkness. So the book is her journey toward doing that.
So is this the beginning of a series or is it a standalone?
It is a standalone. It doesn't, it ends with good closure, but with, you know, a window open if the story ever needed to go on, or if more in the world were to happen. That's definitely a possibility. But as of yet, there's no plans for more books.
Sure. Do you remember the original idea that led you to write Ignite the Sun?
It was, you know, it was kind of a combination of things that built up over the course of a few months, probably. When I started writing the book, I was dealing with my first ever experience with anxiety and depression, and specifically in a seasonal defective affective disorder. I was getting the D and the A mixed up. Excuse me. I have not postpartum brain. I had never experienced anything like that before. And because there was some sort of darkness association with that, that was one of the sparks that started the larger premise of the book. But the smaller ideas, such as, for example, my main character is something called a sun child, that Often, in those days, ideas would come to me while I was walking my dog. I was single at the time, and I lived in an apartment with a fairly large dog, and so multiple walks a day were necessary. And if you need ideas, I would always recommend going for walks because they spark them, I think, getting that blood flowing up to your brain. There was one day in particular I remember where on the trail that we walked, there were quite a few trees, and it was a sunny day. This was kind of back before all the seasonal affective disorder stuff started. And I noticed that there were, you know, stripes of sunlight and stripes of shade all across the path, which is a pretty normal thing. But I started to wonder what would happen if, when you walked into the sunlight, it drew you up and caused you to fly or to leave the ground. But it only could happen in the sunlight. And so that was one of the sparks. Another one was I worked at a plant nursery at that time. And I remember a mother and child walking by, and I thought I heard the boy ask something about the darkness, and I heard it with a capital D. And so I started to wonder, well, what would that be? What is, you know, what would a capital darkness be like? And so then the two kind of ideas and some others ended up melding together and sparked this particular idea.
And was this the first novel that you had written?
No, it was maybe the first novel that was worth reading that I had written. But I started writing books, actually in high school. I wrote in notebooks, sadly, during class a lot of the time, because it was just great fun. And when I went to college with the idea of becoming a writer, so I studied English and creative writing, and then wrote another 4 books, I think, before this one. But this is the first one that I think needed or not needed, but was perhaps worth reading. So.
And so what are your earliest memories of reading and books?
Yeah, great question. I, as a child, didn't like to read books about people. I think you could fairly say that I was obsessed with dogs, which, you know, a lot of children have specific obsessions. I thought that people books were really boring. And so until I was probably late elementary school probably not into middle school. Most of what I read were dog books or horse books. And I could stomach some people if they were at least, interacting with an animal that was also a main character. So that was kind of my early reading life. I eventually started to make room for people in my reading. But we went to the library a lot when I was a kid. I remember doing their summer reading program every year. And I have a few sort of memories of the library closest to our house. And I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we have a really good library system. But the actual location that was closest to where we lived was kind of a small one. And I remember going through their young adult section and feeling a little bit like Beauty and the Beast when Belle comes into the shop and says, "Have you got anything new? Not since yesterday." Wondering why everything was still exactly the same as I had left it, the last time, and wishing for maybe a broader selection. We loved to read growing up. We never had cable or anything like that. And so my brothers and I did a lot of reading and a lot of outside play. So
you mentioned earlier about writing Ignite the Sun. What was the path to publication after you wrote the novel?
Yeah, it was rather long, almost 10 years actually since I first drafted the very first version of the book. I with a previous novel had some good luck with agent interest, if you're not familiar with the publication process, it generally starts with getting a literary agent, and that can be really quite harrowing. Kind of the joke is that you will accumulate enough rejections in your attempt to get an agent to paper your bedroom. Of course, now that's all digital, so you'd have to print them out to paper your bedroom, but I had some contacts that I had made through the process with the last book, they had said they would love to see anything that I would write in the future. Because I took quite a long time to get back with some of them in writing this next book, my contacts dwindled. So I went through several rounds of edits in every kind of comeback and every kind of return to querying those agents, they sort of dwindled further and further. So I eventually reached a point where I felt like the book was really in a good place. Had feedback from beta readers and from some of these agents. And by that point, realized that I needed to start over with my agent hunt. And so that led to about a year-long process of looking for an agent. And I eventually signed with my rock star agent, Jenny Bent. and then we started working together on revising the novel. She's a pretty editorial agent, and I know not all of them are. I'm grateful for that, though, because she was just wonderful in helping me to, I would say, make the book more itself. And it always helps to have an agent who really has the same vision as you do for your book. So we worked together I bet it took 6 months for that initial round of edits to come in. Shortly after that happened, and I got to work on them, my dad actually died of cancer. It was a long, long battle with cancer. So the following months and really the following year was a slow process for me to get really invested in those edits. Strangely, I had quite a lot of life events. I got married and in between signing with my agent and publication. So big life events that kind of slowed down that process, I think, that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So most people don't have quite such a long lag, I would say, between getting an agent and selling their book. The process was a lot of revisions, and some of them were mind-bending, but I think really strengthened the book in the end.
Great. Well, you mentioned earlier writing in notebooks in high school. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, did you start out writing short stories, or did you jump straight into writing novels at that point?
I did jump straight in. One of my problems is that I'm fairly long-winded on the page, and I think that's probably always been true. I favor the sort of narrative length of a novel rather than a short story. And so in high school, I was pretty obsessed with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And that's long too. So I think it's until college, it never even really occurred to me to read short stories to write them. I had multiple spiral notebooks that I just filled out in pencil, actually. I don't know why I wrote in pencil, because it smudges so easily. But I always had a lot of words.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, you'd written several novels before your novel Ignite the Sun, and eventually getting Ignite the Sun published. I'm curious, as you were working on those earlier novels and even those different drafts of Ignite the Sun, were there any specific writing challenges that you had to overcome or figure out, whether it be characterization, mm-hmm. plotting, dialogue, setting, et cetera?
Yeah. I do think just so much of learning to write happens, at least for me, it's happened on the page. I think, you know, you can read craft books, and maybe for some people that sticks. I tend to find most of my learning has to happen by making mistakes. And so, I think writing terrible novels has been, I guess, the way that I've learned to improve. I think some of the steepest learning curves happened after I signed with my agent. And a lot of those had to do with sort of tightening things up, I suppose. I mentioned being wordy. Sometimes that was just literally getting the word count down. But other times it was, you know, is this character necessary? What do they contribute to your main character's development, to her arc, to the overall story? Can you accomplish these same things with fewer characters? Sometimes that was events in the plot. Is this already accomplished elsewhere? Can you condense? So something about YA that is, I think, different from adult fiction is that you really need tight structuring in young adult lit. And I think that's because younger readers, they're harder to satisfy in some ways. They don't have the same kind of indulgence.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Gents that adults do, you know, I think we are willing to slog sometimes. We're willing to read through maybe not unnecessary plot, but certainly less compelling things, because we know that the greater reward of the novel will be worth it. And I think teenagers, especially because they've got so much else that they could be doing and are doing, they need a tight plot if they're going to stick with it. And so, yeah, I think that's been the hardest for me to learn. If you're a Tolkien fan, you probably appreciate the long-winded stuff. So, yeah.
And how did you learn that? Was it a process of just basically looking at the plot and paring it back, or just thinking about every scene and how it contributes to the narrative drive or the plot?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. You know, reading too. I always tell people that the best way to learn to write is to read. The more you read, the more you see how things are done. As an English major, had a lot of classical education, but since college, the bulk of my reading has been young adult fiction. And I think reading so much of it has helped me to see what people do well. I remember a real kind of watershed moment for me was reading the Hunger Games series and realizing that Suzanne Collins ends every chapter on a cliffhanger very deliberately. And not just she invents cliffhangers, but she really does end chapters in the middle of scenes, because you know, when you do that, you're ending in tension and you're kind of compelling the reader forward. And so every lag, or I would say breather, not even lag, in the Hunger Games happens in the middle of a chapter, never at the end of one. So I think reading, I think getting feedback, you know, as I mentioned, my agent was really helpful for me to see the places that things could have been tighter. And then I would say, you know, reading some craft books has helped as well.
Sure.
Even it's not a writing craft book, but I highly recommend Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. It's actually about screenwriting, not about novel writing, but yeah.
So you just mentioned feedback from your agent. I'm curious, did you show any of those early novels or your first draft of Ignite the Sun to anyone else? Or did you ever work with any critique groups?
Yeah, actually the first draft, or maybe the second, I don't know if I would have been that crazy, but very early on in my drafting, I decided, this is crazy and I don't recommend it at all, but I thought the more feedback, the better. And so I was kind of a member of this online writing blogging community. And I think I must have written a blog post that opened up beta reading critiquing to anybody who wanted to do it, which is genuinely a really silly thing to do, because early on you really need less critique from people that you really trust and whose vision is the same as yours, in terms of you know, broad brush vision. So I had a lot of feedback on a really early draft that I would say was more harmful than helpful, because often it was from people I didn't know and who like didn't necessarily like what I was doing, which is fine. That's always going to happen. There will always be people who don't like what you've written, but they're not necessarily the people you need reading your first or second draft and giving you that really important feedback. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to writing, you have a crafting business on Etsy. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. I started that kind of by accident. My father was also a self-employed artist, and he painted ceramic tile. And at some point he bought these Porcelain 150 PBO is the brand, but they're ceramic paint pens that heat set at like 350 Fahrenheit, so you can bake them in your oven. And he sort of had the idea that because everything he did was kiln fired, and he thought, well, I can take these to craft shows and personalize things for people on the spot, and they can go home and, you know, bake it themselves. Well, he ended up not liking them, and he had bought, you know, maybe 10. And since I was kind of always have been a little bit artsy, and I think was in probably some art classes in college at the time, he gave them to me and said, you know, do you want these? Would they be of interest to you? And I said, sure. Brought him back to school with me, and ended up painting some literary quotes on some coffee cups for myself to inspire me while I wrote. Ended up giving them as gifts. And eventually what happened was, you know, my dad said, well, paint some and I'll take them to a show. And then I had a friend who said, these are really cool. You should sell them on this new website called Etsy. and I was like, no, that's crazy. Nobody's going to buy this stuff. But eventually I caved, and it was really filling a niche at the time. And I continued to do that, painting literary quotes and eventually a design with them. And nobody else was really doing that at the time on Etsy. And it really kind of, you know, drew the nerds that were so like me, who wanted to read book quotes on their cups before they went to face the day. So I've been doing that for 10 years this December. And it's just been such a joy. I love
it. And where can people find that Etsy store if they're interested?
It's a long name. I didn't think this through when I picked it. Ophelia's Gypsy Caravan, Ophelias, no apostrophe because it's a you know, website. Gypsy, GYPSY Caravan, and .etsy.com. So, Ophelia was my dog for many years, so she got a shop named for her.
So what writing advice would you offer for listeners who are writing their own stories and novels?
Yeah. Persevere. I think that's the most important one. Especially if you're writing for publication, it's just really hard for a while. Breaking into the industry is really hard. And not because you're bad at it, but because it just takes time. And it takes, you know, catching that right person who's interested in your exact book at that exact moment. And I think it's really easy to get discouraged and to think, you know, I've had 100 rejections, which is not an unusual number. And to think like, that means I'm bad, which is not true. And even if you are bad, you don't have to stay bad. You know, we all get better as we practice and as we, try to implement feedback. And I do think you just got to keep at it. and eventually you'll find the right person who likes your book and wants to take it forward with you. So persevere.
Great. What novels or nonfiction books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Novels or nonfiction. Let's see. I just finished reading I'm Not Dying With You Tonight by Gilly Siegel and Kim. What's her last name? Jones, Kimberly Jones. And it's especially if you're looking to read anything about race relations right now. It's so good. It's so compelling. I also have a friend, Joanna Ruth Meyer, has a new book coming out in January. It's called Into the Heartless Wood, and it's kind of, it's a combination of gender bent Beauty and the Beast plus The Little Mermaid, plus Tree Sirens. And it is so, so good. I've also been reading, this is old, but Madeline Engle has some nonfiction, sort of memoirish books called The Crosswicks Journals. And if you are a writing type of person, she's just wonderful. She has so many beautiful thoughts. I'd highly recommend those.
Great. So are you working on a new novel now?
Well, I had a baby in March. And so since there's a pandemic on, I haven't actually had as much time to do anything as I had hoped that I might. So I have some things kind of stewing, and I've been working on fleshing those out more mentally than on the page. But I'm hoping that as I get the hang of being a mom, I'll also begin to find more time to do other things, including drafting books. So not explicitly, but hopefully soon.
Gotcha. So where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
Yeah. HannahCHoward.com is my website. And I'm also on Instagram, same handle, Hannah C. Howard. On Facebook, if you put author at the end of that, Hannah C. Howard author, that's where you'd find me there.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Hannah Howard, author of the young adult fantasy novel, Ignite the Sun. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Hannah, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ignite the Sun. Prologue. Yarrow, tell me about the sun. Eh? He looked up from his lap, the unwound strings of his fiddle sprawling like insect antennae into the air. What for? I want to hear about the way things used to be, I said, before the darkness. The old man returned to stringing the instrument, brows furrowed. I glanced across the small cabin, warm and smoke-scented from the fire in the hearth, to where Lyndon Hatch, Yarrow's grandson and my best friend since I was 6 years old, sat mending socks. He waved me on with an enthusiastic nod. I stood up, forgetting the feathers I'd been sorting into piles for arrow fletching, causing them to flutter down around me in a whirling cloud. I laughed and spun away from them, toward Yarrow. Once upon a time, there was something called the sun, I prompted, staggering to a halt in front of his rocking chair. Yarrow pressed his lips together, but his stone-colored eyes had gone warm and sparkling. He scratched his bald head and wrinkled his brow, making his bushy gray eyebrows look so much like caterpillars, I half expected them to crawl right off his face. You start at Gildenbrook next week, Syria. Don't you think you might do better to go home and get to bed? My shoulders sagged. Gildenbrook. Stiff lace gowns and tedious lessons for the next 6 years of my life. I wish I could learn to be a gardener instead, I said wistfully. You and Lyndon could teach me. Yarrow snorted. What would your mother and father do with a gardener for a daughter? They want you to become a proper young lady, not a hired hand. He didn't point out the obvious, that my tramping around the dark grounds of our manor with him and Lyndon every day practically made me a hired hand already. I looked around the old cabin, at the scrubbed wooden table, the mismatched curtains I had helped sew, the floor-to-ceiling piles of firewood beside the hearth, more home to me than Nightingale Manor had ever been, and wilted slightly. Yarrow was right. My parents didn't want a gardener for a daughter. But one more week couldn't hurt. I leaned forward and put my hands over the wiry strings of Yarrow's fiddle. Tell me about the way things used to be, I pleaded. Tell me about how the sun would light up the whole world, and about trees being green and leafy, and about grass and blue sky and sunlight and birds and magic. His laughter rolled out in an infectious rumble, making his rocking chair lurch backward and sending me toppling sideways. I think you know it all already, Weedy. Not the way you do. Lyndon had abandoned his darning and was now dragging a fat sack of grain across the floor to the woven rug in front of the rocking chair. We plopped back against it and gazed expectantly up at Yarrow, who sighed. Lyndon grinned at me, messy brown hair everywhere, the dimple winking in his right cheek. Setting aside his half-strung fiddle, Yarrow reached for his pipe and began packing it. I sniffed to catch the spicy, loamy scent, the smell of stories, and waited with my feet tapping while he went to light a taper in the fireplace and ignite the tobacco. Once upon a time, he said, turning back to us as the bowl glowed orange and a trickle of smoke crept out the corner of his mouth. There was something called the sun.